All right, it is Wednesday morning, the day after the midterm elections in the year of our Lord 2022. We're looking at an article from Politico that has some observations that we can either talk about or ignore, just to give us a jumping off point. And I guess what we need to caveat everything with saying that, unfortunately, and kind of a point of frustration is, we still have lots of information out there that's just totally unknown to us yet because of various states. Pennsylvania would be one of those, and there are several others. Did anyone watch it last night? Did you guys do anything with it?
I just would go, and as it was kind of coming in, I'd look at a couple different websites, both conservative and liberal, just to see, like, what's their initial, you know, their predictions, how are they doing things? And I thought, I just kind of looked at it until probably about 10:30 or 11 when I was working on some Hebrew stuff. But I was honestly surprised that it looked like the more conservative networks were being a little more dismal looking outlooking for themselves versus the more liberal networks were more like, looks like the conservatives are getting this one. But again, we still don't even know at this point. I mean, I just pulled up Fox News real quick. They're still listing that, you know, in the Senate, it's still 48-48. So, anyone's race on that. The House, you know, Democrats have closed in at once. At least what they're projecting is 172 versus Republicans at 199.
So, we don't have a majority in either place yet.
No.
Are they accounting for the two unaffiliated?
I don't know how they're accounting for them in that.
It's just, this is just their infographics on the page.
Most conservative places count it Democrat. Most liberal places count it Democrat. Surprisingly, it seemed like Google was the only place that articulated that there's two. So they must be known voters who tend to vote Democratic.
Must be.
Yeah, I bet Google does have a little bit of information on people other than what polling places might have.
I'm just talking about the two guys that are actually not up for election.
All right, so there was no red wave, so that seems to be very apparent unless something changes radically based on what happens with the uncounted votes yet. But
there wasn't even a pink ripple.
Pink ripple, did you get that? That was clever.
As I was looking at some of the infographics, it did look like, because they had the number of seats, both sections, they had like the number of seats that weren't even up for re-election, but then like the initial ones of where that, like that plus or minus to get them to that number. Yeah, I definitely wouldn't say, use the word wave, but it did look like at least there were a few initial seats. It was like, oh, wow, they've kind of gained a little more ground over here than this side did over here. That looked like there was a little bit of a shift, but at the same time, you know, it may not, doesn't necessarily affect the outcome. It was just like, oh, based upon what's already in, there's been a shift to a greater level over here.
So the first line is, there was no red wave. Republicans still poised to take the House, underperformed while Democrats breathed a huge sigh of relief. It was a good night for Joe Biden and a miserable one for Donald Trump. Probably it was the best night of anybody for DeSantis in Florida. That's probably if
yeah, I saw he Miami-Dade County.
Yeah.
You know, like Miami, Florida voted red.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. We could have done an entire podcast on that, but he won 4 years ago with 0.5%. And he won last night with 18 points.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's all. It's all got to be pandemic related. I mean, you think about the community. I know we're not necessarily deep diving into what's going on in Florida, but Miami County, that is a huge spring break community. That is a huge party community. You think of every bar, every club, every one of those places that remained open was allowed. I mean, we even saw, you know, the liberal politicians going down there to go, you know, vacation and not wear masks and all these things. And so it would make complete sense that all those people that are in Miami that are doing well financially and economically, they have their governor to thank for it.
Well, it's good that they realize that.
Yeah.
Yeah, they certainly did seem to make a connection. There are four Republican governors that I can think of off the top of my head. New Hampshire, Georgia, Florida, and Texas. And all of them were very open up, get the kids back in school, things like that. Mm-hmm. And all four of them were elected with a, I think it was 8 points in Georgia. I think it was 8 points in New Hampshire. It was Democrats poured all kinds of money into Texas thinking that they were going to be able to possibly win the gubernatorial race in Texas. And Abbott was elected, I thought, to his third or fourth term as governor of the state. So what I found interesting about that is that all four of those governors that were elected were not buddies with Trump. Not at all. Pretty solid distancing, especially Florida. Mm-hmm. And it can't help but to wonder what's going through Trump's mind right now.
Hopefully retirement.
Hopefully that he's not going to spend the $8 to get his Twitter verified.
Sidebar issue there.
Yeah. He's a wild card, yeah. So what exactly he is thinking is probably not anything that we're thinking.
It's going to be huge, though.
Well, I think the next line in the article is exactly what is Trump. It's accurate. It's the heading. It's that Trump is damaged goods. I mean, there's no excusing the fact that Donald Trump, while in office, did some phenomenal things for economy, specifically in the realm of energy production. But his mouth or his fingers just divided him between a lot of people. And there's no, in the internet age that we're living in, there is no taking that back. I mean, we're seeing even in smaller areas, lower level politicians did something when they were in college that, you know, many secular college students do. But it's come back to haunt them because of this internet age. So that's why while I appreciate the state of the economy that we had and, you know, the fuel prices, the energy production that he did, it's I'm in that position of I don't know that I'd want my name associated with Donald Trump because he is a wild card. You have no idea what you're going to get out of him.
And of course, we also with the Supreme Court justices, we need to give props for that. But yet his methodology and his demeanor at times were so negative.
Yeah, it says Trump is still a dominant figure in the Republican Party, and he'll be a favorite win. He'll be the favorite to win the GOP nomination for president if, as expected, he runs. I'm not sure I agree with that. I really don't. I don't even. There's no way he'll win Florida. He can't win Florida. And if he can't win his own state, I don't agree with that sentence. I'll just put it.
I don't know how the GOP would do that to themselves with them still pursuing all kinds of legal things. Your candidate. That's just starting out with your foot in the bucket.
Well, especially, I watched DeSantis's victory speech, and it was unbelievably presidential. I mean, he was... Go ahead, Mike.
Well, yeah, I mean, it depends on who runs. So, like, if DeSantis runs, it would seem like most of the Republican Party would see the ability to have the policies but not have the negatives that Trump brings. And so... Yeah, I think that we would head in that direction.
Two or three times, maybe four times, in the middle of his speech, they kept on interrupting him with two more years, two more years, two more years. And the crowd was just going crazy with two more years. I don't know. He looks presidential. He looked presidential. His wife is a cancer survivor. I mean, it just looked like the... picture perfect. This is put them in office. Three little adorable children. I just can't fathom the Republican Party giving him another opportunity to mess things up. This should have been a red wave. But we learned a lot about our nation. We learned several things about our nation. Last night, we learned that abortion is a really big deal to them. They want the ability to kill babies in the womb. And anything that would seem to hinder that, because we were told by the pundits that that was an August thing, but by the time we got to the November election, the economy trumped it. Well, if it was strictly economy, then we should have seen a red wave, but we didn't see a red wave unless something changes radically, and because of the late reporting data that we don't have, we get something different. But that's not what happened. I think the other thing we learned is Americans like their free money.
Well, of course I do.
Yeah, I don't...
I mean, it was Lessus de Tocqueville in the 1830s when he wrote Democracy in America. He said in that book that America will stand in greatness until its people realizes that it can vote for itself the nation's wealth out of the treasury.
And that's exactly what we're doing. I mean,
he predicted this almost 200 years ago. This should not surprise any of us.
Vote itself God out of the bedroom and the money out of the treasury.
No, that's exactly what's happened. I mean, and why are we talking about this? Because this is the people group that God has providentially ordained that we minister to. These are the lost people that we need to reach. We need to recognize the infiltration of secularism into the world that we minister to beyond our comprehension. It just, these are the people that we're winning to Christ. These are the people that we will need to disciple. These are the people who don't think that aborting something at 12, 15, 18, 20 weeks is a problem. It's a whole new America. And when we say, we don't mean like 4 or 5 generations ago. I mean, we're talking about the difference, Steve, when you became a pastor here 30 years ago and to where you're pastoring now. It is a different Fayetteville. It is a different state of North Carolina in every regard.
And really something you have to consider, too, is you go look at the state of North Carolina, and in many instances, we had the opportunity to have 7.4 million voters. We had 3.5. So just slightly over 50% voted. In that voting population, we have to start configuring for generational life. Okay, so how many of the baby boomers between 46 and 64, 1964, are so old that they can't get out and vote? Okay, they're going to have the most conservative values of all of us, by and large, on record. The historical elections that they elected people to show us that. Though they had some back and forth. But even then, their liberals are our today's conservatives.
Sure.
So they would hold that ground. Generation X, 1965, 1980, probably voted a lot of us. Millennial generation, though, is 81 to 96. And Gen Z is 97 to 2012. All of them are voting. And they had the University of Michigan where they showed a picture of it. It was out the student commons. Line winding inside the building, out the door, through the student commons courtyards, down around buildings. I mean, it was just like you would think that 100% of the college came out to vote. Okay, when they do, they're going to come out.
They got free homework passes.
They might have. I mean, it is not uncommon. We know that many college professors to win generation, even in the Vietnam War, padded grades and admit to padding grades and just giving A's so students could stay enrolled in college to avoid being drafted. It was their way of protesting the war, and also then they were able to keep them in and indoctrinate them for future voting. Yeah. The book Tuesday with Maury, the professor that was the centerpiece of that, Maury, Professor Maury, actually confessed to that to the guy who actually journaled and wrote the book. And it's a true life story. I mean, they did that. It's how they control it. So you're looking at 72 million millennials, 68.6 Gen Z. That's huge.
Right.
And they are going to have these things because they've been taught individual right trumps collective good.
Sure. Yeah, there was no discussion about the national debt. Nobody was talking about the national debt. There's literally no concern about the debt that we're in. On either political parties, on any debates, nowhere. It was dead. It's literally a dead issue. And there's not a repudiation for the trillions of dollars that were spent by the Biden administration through the Congress. No one came out and said, stop spending money.
Well, that's not entirely true. But there were so few of them that we just didn't hear their voices. Dan Crenshaw, Houston representative, District 2 of Texas, is consistently and constantly on social media picking apart every money bill as misleading.
So he's one out one of 435.
Five. Yeah, that's what I said. There's so few of them that we don't hear their voice enough.
I mean, I cannot think of a single senator that has any legitimate leadership role that was talking anything about debt, concern with debt.
Well, when you look at the platforms for both parties,
right?
they see the wave of the future is through spending money, spending it in slightly different ways, but in slightly different amounts. But both of them want to spend money. They don't want to balance the budget.
Well, I will tell you this.
Ross Perot showed us that can't be done.
Well, I will tell you this, if you want to talk about values and everything else and how ugly politics are, you can look to Georgia and Herschel Walker and Warnock.
Sure.
So I was in Atlanta last week, and, you know, you're joking about social media and stuff tracking you. So I hopped on my laptop late at night because I was tired, just tired of working. I was going to watch an episode of a TV show I watch on Hulu. And I'm cheap. I pay for the ads. I'm not going to pay for the no ads. And then, so the ads are popping in. And before I left to go down to Atlanta, it was Ted Budd and Sherry Beasley. Ted Budd and Sherry Beasley. Ted Budd and Sherry Beasley. I got down there, and it was Warnock and Walker. And in literally in the first commercial break, you get a anti-Walker one, and it's talking about how he chased down this woman, had a gun, his wife even filed for a restraining order against him, everything else, and bad, you know, just terrible, terrible, terrible. And then in the next one, they literally had Warnock's ex-wife in the street crying and giving a clip of an interview where she's talking about how horrible of a man he is.
Yeah.
And they were just leveraging the absolute worst instead of even promoting what was good about either one of them. Yeah. It was, well, he's better than this one. Well, no, actually, he's worse than this other guy. It was just, we're so negatively driven in our country now.
Well, the third
fear is reigning.
Yeah, the third paragraph says, in Georgia, Herschel Walker was locked in a neck-and-neck contest with Democratic Senator Raphael Warnock, Governor Brian Kemp, whose resistance to overturn the 2020 results infuriated Trump, easily defeated his Democratic opponent, Stacey Abrams. She actually conceded early in the night, and she said that her election was stolen at the last time that but she conceded this time. He won by several points. And so the down ballot recipient of that should have been Herschel Walker, but it did not happen. So what that means is people are making a deliberate choice to check this governor, but either not vote for him or vote for the opposing one. I mean, that's all that you can conclude when the Stacey Abrams, the governor, and I mean, those were on their ballot. That would have been the number one spot and the number two spot is how that would have been on their ballot. So they're making a very deliberate choice, either not to vote or to vote for the opposing candidate. And, you know, how do you talk about the fact that neither candidate is worth anything from a cognitive perspective without sounding whatever judgmental, I guess. I'll just leave it at that. The man played football, and then what? And now he's qualified to be one of the two representatives to the United States Senate? I'm just suggesting that we no longer have a high bar for these positions. Think about Pennsylvania, Fetterman. Okay, I don't know Fetterman before the stroke, but the stroke is a reality. The stroke is a reality, okay? And it impends his ability to communicate. His cognitive function is presently diminished, and they didn't show us anything like 3 weeks from now he'll be fine, because nobody ever knows how long it's going to take for a stroke victim to recover from the damage that occurred during that stroke. Yet it looks like he's going to win. So what does that say about the quality of the opposing candidate? This is your state. Do you have any thoughts?
It almost seems like that one is a Trump-related issue.
Is it a political party-related issue? Is it that we don't care about the abilities of our candidate anymore? I mean, what do you do with what we're seeing?
I would say in some semblance it relates to Biden, to where you're so locked in on an agenda and this is the person that gives you the best opportunity to win for your agenda, even though there might be some negative qualities. They might not have the cognitive level that they used to or should have, but yet because they're the greatest chance to win, to get your agenda through, you're just going to overlook that they might have a diminished capacity and whatever negative effects could come out of that.
So he'll have the ability to vote yes with Biden, and as long as we can be assured he'll vote yes with Biden, we're okay with that. So elect a monkey to the office if I just... Oh, wow. Is this really where we're at as a nation?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, on a local level, I was surprised on my ballot, because you guys were talking about the Fayetteville thing, and I'm like, that wasn't on my ballot, but I'm only Cumberland County. I was surprised by the number of missing Republican judge candidates.
Yeah.
I was just like...
Where are they?
I'm like, there were like four or five
races,
races seats for local judge seats, completely uncontested. And I'm just like, well, you know, on my paper ballot, I was obviously able not to, you know, fill in the dot. But it was just like, I was talking with a church member yesterday that because of the tremors that they have in their hand, they had to do a digital ballot. And it would not let them go past those sections without voting for one of those judges.
And Brian, I voted for them. And I'm not. They're running uncontested. They're going to win. What's another vote? I filled it in to ensure that my ballot wasn't rejected for not having circled in.
Well, I asked that question. They said it wouldn't be.
I didn't ask. I didn't assume. And I'm not going to take the chance of somebody being wrong.
And that little machine also tells you whether your ballot's going to be
counted. I know that, but.
But yeah. But I did not fill it in.
Yeah, but I mean, the point is, you know, we're talking about candidates. It's just like, why are there no Republican judges interested in running in our
area? It costs money to run, and what is the point when you know you're going to lose?
Well, in some of those...
They're not going to swing this county.
Right.
Okay, but some of those, too, don't you have to have certain qualifications to actually even be able to run for that
seat? I'm not sure what...
I'm sure you'd have to be at least a lawyer at a minimum.
Right.
You'd have to be...
That's what my mom said. You should run. I said, Mom, I didn't go to law school.
Right. Exactly. Right. I mean,
they give away online degrees now.
I mean, you'd have to live in that district. You'd have to,
I'm sure.
Whatever, have a certain background, certain degree,
and what's the point if you know that there's not a chance in the world? I mean, Cumberland County is just a blue county. I mean, it's blue, blue, blue. It's not purple. It's not gonna unblue. It's not light blue. It's a blue county. You know, all you have to do is just the red, blue maps that they have by county. Look at Pennsylvania, your state.
Mm-hmm.
Man, if it wasn't for Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, it's a red state.
Well, it's kind of a microcosm of the whole nation.
Yes, sure.
You know, when you get to the coasts,
yep.
You know, then that's where it's Democratic. But through the middle, highly Republican. Same thing in Pennsylvania.
Sure. You've got Erie, you've got Pittsburgh, and you've got the Philadelphia area. And then that's it. The rest of the state is just a sweeping red state.
Well, but that's the areas that's the highest populated.
Sure, right.
And so you're going to get the most populous vote there.
How long have you lived in North Carolina?
Longer than I lived in Pennsylvania. I've actually tipped the scale.
I just realized I don't have a my state. I'm not going to call Michigan my state.
Right.
I wouldn't call it my state either.
But I've been here 22 years, and I don't know if I'd call North Carolina my state either. But it has to be. I
grew up there for till I was 23. My state is conscious. And now I'm 52, so that'd be 29 years.
We're pilgrims.
Yeah,
pilgrims.
Here now.
Mm. Now your state went.
Yeah, I'm fast. Very well, I'm fast approaching that tipping point. It was only 18 years in Ohio, so.
But Ohio went very red. It looks like J.D. Vance.
Yep. Won. Yeah. And even what's his name? The governor that had been in, you know, like there were issues throughout the pandemic, you know, but no, it seems like that's very much the case, and it's very similar to how Pennsylvania is. Maybe a few more cities, but you've got. Cincinnati and Columbus and Cleveland are kind of like the main drive, but what's happening is, at least in the southwestern portion of the state, is between Dayton, which is my home, and then Cincinnati, is they're basically turning it into one mega city, to where you don't really leave one city and enter another. You're just kind of in city all the way through.
Wow.
It started with Middletown, which you all know we support a missionary who's out of Middletown. But then as it's kind of growing, it's just like you never really leave one, go out into the, oh yeah, now we're in a rural area, back into another, you know, suburb. But it's just one massive, they're widening the freeway all the way through because of the amount of traffic that goes through there. But that's kind of what's indicative of our nation anyway. The further you get away from city center, the further red it goes. You know, it's, which is so ironic. I mean, it's not that there's not landowners inside the city, but I just think back to like the early days in our nation of who was qualified to vote. You know, and it had to be a male and a landowner. But it's just interesting that those who own, it seems like those who have more land tend to vote more conservatively.
I was surprised by New Hampshire. I thought that, again, down ballot. Don
Bolduc
would have done better, but I think, can anyone look up the results on your phone for the New Hampshire Senate race? I think it, what, you know, it.
You know what I find interesting is that, you know, until just this
68
year.
68 to
28.
28? No, that's wrong. I'm sorry. Hold on. Okay. It clicked wrong. It won't click over. Hold on.
Until this year, you know, Democrats would say things like, oh, you can vote for us. The abortion thing is not a big issue. Right. Mm-hmm. Well, now we've got, it's a big issue.
Yeah, Maggie Hansen got 54% and Don
43.
Bolduc 43.
10 points, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we were told that it was a very close race. In Arizona, it was still early with only about half of the expected vote in, but Carrie Lake was running behind Katie Hobbs. Even if she comes back to win, it will be closer race than political professionals of both parties have predicted. Had a more traditional Republican, Carrie Taylor Robinson, made it through. Let's read about the Biden calendar problem.
So, with Tuesday looking a lot better for Democrats than expected, it's possible we'll see some rallying around Biden. Presidents who suffered much more punishing midterms went on to win second terms. So, give Biden his due. But it's hard to argue that Democrats overperformed on Tuesday because of Biden, rather than in spite of him. His approval rating, hovering around 41%, is dismal, and has been all year. He'll turn 80 this month, and earlier this year, a majority of Democrats polled saying they'd prefer someone else to be the party's nominee. But the one thing Biden did have going for him was the calendar, and the reluctance of Democrats to do anything that might hurt him, and by extension, the party ahead of midterms. That imperative is gone now, and though no prominent Democrat is likely to run a serious campaign against Biden, there will be increasing pressure on him, especially from the left, to step aside. It's already happening. On Wednesday, in an effort described first to Politico, a left-wing group that worked in 2020 to persuade progressives to support Biden, will start airing digital ads in New Hampshire highlighting Biden's extremely low approval rating and depicting him weak as an incumbent. We cannot risk losing 2024, says one ad, part of a RootsAction.org campaign. We shouldn't gamble on Joe Biden's low approval rating.
So let's see how old Trump is. Does anyone know without me looking at it?
He's almost there.
Right. He turns 80 this month, doesn't he? No, that's Biden.
It says Biden right here, Trump's age.
And just to think about that concept, back to the cognitive, we know when people reach 76? You know, 60s, 70s, 80s, they're not able to think and process like they once could. And so across the board, not looking at any one particular political party, to me, we should be looking for younger people. But yet, again, we're getting this tunnel vision. And
Biden would be 82 and Trump would be 78.
Yep.
That's where we'd be.
Yeah. I don't think that younger people have the ability to raise the money that you need to win. I think that's a large issue. And, you know, we know that as you get older, you know, people amass more wealth and influence.
How could both political parties not put up somebody that was at a bare minimum, Mike, in the previous generation?
Yeah, at least in their 60s. I mean, let's can we drop it, you know, right. 15 mm-hmm. years, yeah. You know, maybe 20?
Right.
Go crazy.
Who knew that number 35 being a minimum age would actually be irrelevant?
Yeah, totally.
You must be at least 80 years old.
It would be interesting to see to compare local politics and the age in that arena. We talked about these judges and things like this and how, you know, they tend to run Democrat and more local politics, it seems like, in cities at least. It would seem, you know, comparatively that the national politics, they're much older. And they tend to be, you know, not necessarily incumbent due to term limits, but just always around the game because, you know, it takes a while to learn how to play the game. Unfortunately,
and get your name known. I mean, it's a career. That's what it is. So if you graduate college or you graduate high school at 18, you go get a 4-year pre-law degree, then you go to law school, then you finally get in, you know, and you're working. I mean, by the time you're actually anywhere near. In a company where they might even remember your name, you're 30 years old. And then it's how, you know, you get involved with a particular group or entity, and it's just, I mean, you're 40 before you even have a chance to, like, even think about being someone that might be in a position like that.
But you should, I mean, I don't know, I just...
Well, maybe with the advent of influencers, it might change.
Teddy Roosevelt.
You know, that's the last girls. Thing I want is some TikTok star running for president.
Teddy Roosevelt was 42. He was the youngest. Followed by Kennedy at 43, Clinton at 46, Grant at 46, Obama at 47, and Grover Cleveland at 47.
So it'd be interesting as you know, we talked about DeSantis. He's 44.
So he'd be 46.
Yeah. And Pence is, I just lost it, 63.
Mike Pence isn't electable.
DeSantis.
He's too conservative.
Generic.
The reason why he won, and if you go back and you even look at when he was being painted by Politico, by the liberal voice as being this radical guy, he wasn't out there saying me.
Yep.
He was saying Florida, 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 Florida.
Yep.
He has the ability to possess level 5 leadership, you know, and that comes from a book, Good to Great, about corporations that are able to sustain market wins over a 20-year period. And a level 5 leader has this paradox of being both humble and confident. He came off extremely confident to the point of they calling him rogue. But yet the humbleness of it is the administration of Florida has done this, the rescue workers of Florida have done this, these other people have done this. I asked my people asked the president for money to help us in our recovery. No. It wasn't an I.
No, it wasn't a me.
So he was able to collectivize the people, and his key to a presidential term would be, can he paint the picture that what's going on in Florida, the positives, could be a national.
Yep, can be replicated. And that's why he, on the, his, like, the placard that was on his podium was, I believe, was Freedom Wins. Freedom Wins. And you think about it, that's like such a national idea. And he was referring to the lockdowns and all that they did, you know? And I mean, he specifically said woke is dead or woke is in the grave. I mean, we buried woke in Florida. I mean, and if you put Trump and you put DeSantis, I mean, it's literally we and me. I mean, it is that difference. Stark contrast.
One thing we haven't talked about, and we need to, because it directly impacts us as an organization the most, was the Supreme Court election here in our state.
What happened?
Both Dietz and Allen won as Republicans, and they picked up seats 3 and 5. Mm. So our Supreme Court remains a conservative 4-3 balance, which means that most likely that if the lawsuit against the scholarship, opportunity scholarship, anything else goes to the Supreme Court, it will be upheld based upon the conservatism of a school choice. The thing with that is that they it's went from a district court and it was mandated to a single judge making a ruling on it, who is a conservative. So we anticipate the approval of the scholarship remaining. And not making private schools have to give up our religious freedom to have it. Mm-hmm. That's the central thing. It's not a matter of remaining. It's,
do we have to stop being distinctively Christian to maintain it? Right.
Correct. So chances are the right to religious exemption will be upheld by this court, which means then it goes to an appeal to the Supreme Court.
Where
there will still be a conservative hold. And in fact, they didn't want it to go to the Supreme Court until after the election, because for the last 2 years, it's actually been a liberal court. So this is a win in that category in keeping school choice in play for North Carolina and schools being able to maintain their identities.
Hmm. That's interesting that our state, that our court swings more conservative this go-round. Well, not necessarily in every other location.
Well, I think it speaks to the idea that that people are beginning to understand your judicial areas are just as important as your
senatorial. Legislative and executive.
Because they're in gridlock.
Right.
And Brian, I would say that is the largest thing about Trump and his presidency, not the economy.
Yeah, if everything's in gridlock and everything else, then executive orders come into play. That's the only way you can be as executive branch to get past the gridlock. So they're going to do executive orders. Well, now state attorneys attorney generals are going to sue. Well, that means it kicks to the Supreme Court. So you want a conservative Supreme Court if you're a conservative. You want a governor who's going to appoint a conservative attorney general, so you have the elections for your conservative governors. You want your Supreme Court to be likewise in line with that. So, especially with the national Supreme Court kicking things back down on the 10th Amendment to say it's a state issue, it's a state issue, it's a state issue.
Well, we should have executive orders and vetoes and things in our pocket now.
Well, I'm reading from the News and Observer, which is the Raleigh paper, right? The News and Observer. Mm-hmm. Says Republicans appear to win the North Carolina Senate supermajority, but fall one seat short in the House. Mm. So, of course, the supermajority allows you to overturn the veto from the governor. But clearly, North Carolina is either a red state or it's what color would be almost red all the time. You know, I know we have a Democrat Republican, but we have a House, a Senate, and a Supreme Court all controlled by the Republicans.
And our lieutenant governor is Republican.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's very strong.
Yep. Do you think Bud's going to have an issue with the school issue?
Who?
Bud.
Ted Bud? Mm-hmm. He's at the Senate. He's a national senator.
Right, but I mean, is he going to have? He's not going to have an issue with
the. No. He's very conservative, but it has nothing to do with it.
But he wouldn't have any impact on this in the first place. It would be our Senate.
Yeah, the supermajority Senate.
Right.
Yeah. But that's very interesting that the two, that I was listening to NPR last night and they were talking about our Supreme Court in the state of North Carolina and how they were hoping that it would not go to that Republican majority because they want to offset the power of the Congress.
What got me was, as I look back at Arkansas, where I come from.
Got your first female governor.
Yeah, they did. But they have always been a purple state. Incredibly mixed. If you go and you look at the state map, there's not a blue county in the state. It is completely and utterly solid red.
Well, I was amazed that Huckabee's daughter is now the governor.
Well, yeah, and the fact of the matter is she distanced herself from Trump early in his presidency.
But she's never had an elected office.
Yeah, but Trump attacked her dad, right? Early on?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I can see where she would do that, obviously.
But how do you go from being the president's press secretary to the governor of a state? Is there anything in between, or is that just kind of like the natural thing? Press secretary, governor?
She had the notoriety.
I know, exactly. I mean, it's just, are there any qualifications? John, you ought to run for something, right? I mean, it's just...
Well, this has been the case for years, though.
I know.
It was, I forget, what state was it up in the northern Midwest that John Goldberg, the wrestler, ran... Or no, Wisconsin. It was Jesse Ventura.
Yeah, Wisconsin, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Ventura was pro-governor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Wisconsin, and then, right? Yeah, we saw the same thing in California with Arnold Schwarzenegger years ago.
Sure.
So if you've got enough notoriety, yeah, I don't know what state Dwayne The Rock Johnson is. I
soil conservation. I wrote in Brian Nolf once for that. Just saying.
All right, well, we'll have more to talk about because, I mean, we don't even have enough to really be definitive. We don't even know who's controlling either the Senate or the House. And that's a whole other conversation. Is how is it that Florida kicks out like 99.9% of the results by midnight, and we have states that are still at 20%, 30%, 40% reporting? It's that variance in how every state does elections, and it's huge differences.
Yeah, because like Pennsylvania, they can't touch the early ballots until election day, so those can't be all neat and tidy, ready to do.
Right.
You actually have to do them by hand starting yesterday.
I was listening last night, and in Florida, you can digitally check on your ballot, and you can see where it is in the process. If you mail it in or whether you voted, and you can go online and see your own ballot and validate that it was properly counted.
So Amazon needs to run the polling places?
Well, they probably do that part. Their AWS or whatever it is, right, is probably behind that.
All right, well, thanks for listening. Have a great day.